All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 169. What's going on, Deborah?
Not much.
Guys, we are a value for value production. You know the spiel. We are 100% listener supported. Cash, time, talent, treasure. Emily just entered the room. Would you like to make an appearance?
Hey, Em.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, doll.
Do you need anything else? Look, there's Tweety's in here in her little pocket.
Oh.
So, guys, yeah, donations have been pretty light. Some would even call it non-existent lately. Our podcast hosting service subscription is due soon. So if we could get some help with that, it'd be greatly appreciated. If not, no big deal. We'll make it happen. And guys, we are brought to you by the Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Our good friend Tony Arterburn doing it over there in Branson, Missouri. If you would like to enroll in their Wolfpack subscription, monthly subscription program with package deals starting at $50 with precious metals shipped to your doorstep every month, go to DeborahGetsRedPilled.gold. Go find the Wolfpack program and get on there. If you're the first one of our listeners to do it, let us know. We'll shout you out on air. And that's all the business, Deborah.
Okay.
I feel like we just spoke recently.
We did indeed. We did yesterday.
Yeah. I've been, I haven't been very consistent with getting the episodes out. So I just sat down at the computer a couple hours ago and produced 3 episodes. Released one, the one that Chud and I did on Latin with our friend Adam Stokes, the giant guy. And then I produced 2 more and delayed their release for Friday and Sunday. So that's what I need to do more often when I have some time, is just go do them all at once. And then I can delay when they come out, you know? So we have a guest today, but I'm thinking maybe in the near future where this will be clear. This will be all the guests we have after today for you and I. Maybe just do solo stuff for a while before we got some guests. What do you think? Everybody loves the headline show. That's pretty fun.
Okay.
Feel good about keeping you in the loop.
I'll work with you.
Cool. What's interesting you the most right now?
In the world?
What's the most interesting thing to you in the world? Your dog?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good enough. That's a good answer.
Yeah, he's my constant companion.
Yeah, that's good. You put up a fun picture of him on the... Can you shout out his... He has an Instagram.
Yes, he does.
Would you like people to find it?
I think it's Cubby the Pit. I'm not sure.
Just Cubby the Pit, one word. Or there's some underscores on there.
I'll have to just let you know. It is Cubby the Pit, all lowercase, no nothing else. Just Cubby the Pit.
Cubby,
all one word.
The Pit. CubbyThePit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, scary looking goofball.
Yep.
He's very, very kind.
Awesome.
Do you think he's developmentally disabled? If he was like a human, would he be in special ed? Would he ride a shorter bus?
Would he ride the short bus? I don't think so. I truly don't, because he,
he's just a kind, gentle spirit. Yeah. He doesn't like vacuums. He sure doesn't.
No, he wants to eat the vacuums.
He didn't like my piggies. He wanted to eat my piggies.
I'm not sure. I'm not going to say he wanted to eat them. I'm not going to say he wanted to be friendly.
Or maybe not the pigs, maybe the sheep.
Yeah. I think he's definitely curious.
Yeah.
Because I take him just about every year. They bring in big herd of goats to chomp all the greenery. to keep the fire down.
Okay, Deborah, you're frozen up. You're back.
Oh, okay. He just enjoys seeing the goat, so I'm not sure what he. Oh, it says my internet connection is unstable. Huh.
Okay. Well, we've done enough of an intro here. We did enough yesterday and today. So let's just let our guest in. Let's see what she's up
Okay.
to. All right. There she is.
There she is.
Hey, what's going on, Julia?
What's going on?
How's it going, guys? Today, our guest once again is the beautiful Cosmic Peach. Julia, welcome
Hi.
to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, we are too. If there's anybody that's gonna do some fun research and form your own, that's your specialty, is forming your own opinion once you've done the research. I'm not quite there yet. I can do a lot of research, I can listen to a lot of podcasts, but I'm not creative enough to figure stuff out on my own like you do. I
I think
saw,
you don't give yourself enough credit.
yeah, I saw a while back you did a podcast on the Dyatlov Pass incident. It caught my eye. It's one of my favorite mysteries of the 20th century. Deborah, are you familiar with it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, Julia, what happened at Dyatlov Pass? These, they're Ukrainians, right, or Russians?
Russian.
So, like, it was like, were they college students?
So some of them were older than
Yeah.
others, but there was nine of them, and they were all like super experienced engineers, really intelligent people, and they had made several treks to the mountain where they actually eventually ended up dying on, but they had made treks to that area before. They were successful in all their other treks, but this one time that they went, it ended up in the death of all nine hikers, mutilated, various stages of like decomposition of the bodies. It was a massive mystery.
Some of
And
them
didn't
were.
they like take their clothes off and
Oh, some of them were wearing the other one's shoes. Some of them were wearing the other one's coats. All of them were barefoot. Some were missing eyes, some were missing tongues. One girl looked like an actual skeleton. They had been prematurely aged, skin melted off the bones.
And they,
Some of them had like the crush syndrome, like all the bones on the inside were crushed like eggshells, but the body on the outside was pristine. Super bizarre, but yes, that is a Dyatlov Pass.
They had cut out from inside the tents. It's
Yeah.
the tents were all
Yeah.
ripped up, but it was they had cut out from the inside. Wild
Yes.
stuff. Were you able to come up with what you thought happened there?
Yeah, so I think that it was probably a directed energy weapon.
Interesting.
They were all involved in the KGB, so they all had KGB connections, and the KGB was aware that they were going on this trek together. And if I'm going to test out something like that, I would probably do it on my own people in an isolated area and no witnesses, if you know what I'm saying. So
Yeah.
I do think they were part of an experiment.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Wow.
Maybe there was all sorts of different aspects of this directed energy weapon that they were testing out. Like they're like, "Oh, this one can crush the bones. This one can make somebody go
Yes.
insane.
This one
This
will make
one
somebody
can
melt.
melt." Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to think like if they're testing something like this out on these people in the various ways that they were found, it's like some of them got blasted directly and like the skin melts off, eyes, gone, tongue gone. But some of them were just like crushed, but their outsides were fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, I do believe this is something like a directed energy weapon because the like indigenous peoples of that area were claiming to have seen glowing spheres in the sky. A lot of people wanted to jump straight to like, oh, UFOs, which is fine if you wanted to go with UFOs, but I think it was literally like an EMF like blast, like bam, like that, and it just kind of in various degrees killed them all.
Yeah.
But, glowing spheres have been ever present in Russia in this area. So it's a lot of just weird activity over there.
Yeah, there's lots of cool stuff going on over there. Have you ever heard of the Tunguska explosion?
No, what's
Oh
it?
man, you got to check that out. I think
Oh.
that one is 1907 Tunguska, Tunguska. And it was just they say, like, the layman will say, like, oh, this giant meteor struck. But all, like, this huge area, miles, square miles and square miles, were just leveled by
See,
something
that doesn't
they don't know
sound
what
like
it
a
was.
meteor to me. It and it never does sound like the explanation they give, because like they ruled the death of these nine hikers like hypothermia. And what hypothermia do you know of that's melting people's skin off, crashing people's bones? It just never makes any logical sense to me that the explanations they give for stuff like that.
Well, today, well, so I saw you posting about that, and I was like, okay, maybe she's, let's see. I can't remember how the Yuba County Five came up, but I
The
remembered it.
American Dlova.
And I thought,
Yes,
is that what they
yes.
call it?
They call
Yes.
it
Okay,
the
so that.
American Dyatlov Pass, which actually, so I had kind of like posted some promotional stuff on Instagram about the Dyatlov Pass episode, and you commented on it and you were like, oh, well, have you ever heard of the Yuba County Five? And I was like, no, but I'd be happy to learn about it because I know you always do like kind of like really interesting topics. So this one is definitely the American Dyatlov Pass. I mean, it's crazy, all the twists and turns. I was like, my mind was reeling.
And I've listened to some podcasts on it over the past few years, and they were all pretty good, but it would just be like an hour long episode. And then I found that one that I sent to you that was like an 8-part series, and they really got into it, talked about all the different guys that were involved, and really talked about the landscape that it took place in. And that was the good part for me, because I have spent years and years of my life in that general vicinity. And so when they're talking about specific roads and things like that, I know where they're talking about. I can picture it in my head, and I've like been there. So it was pretty
Oh,
cool to
that's
hear it like that.
good. That'll actually help me with my theory, maybe. Because,
So yeah.
oh, go ahead. I was
No,
just going to say,
you
because
go.
it is interesting. I've never been to this area. I've never been to the Dyatlov Pass either. But like, I at some point, some of the stuff that I come up with has to be speculation because I've never been there. I don't know. But just based, and I listened to the whole 8-part series that you sent me because I just found it highly interesting. But they kind of like walk you through each of the guys, the five guys. Not talking about the restaurant here, people. We're talking about five separate guys who went missing, and they show you their humanity, because a lot of the time when people describe this story, it's like, for lack of a better word, they say five retarded guys got lost in the mountains, and that's just the end of the
Not,
story. They're
that's not
idiots.
what it
They
was.
got, discombobulated, and they all died of their own accord, pretty much, which I feel like is a gross generalization of what really happened.
It was what I kind of took away from it was they were all kind of autistic guys before
Yeah.
there was the whole,
Intellectual disabilities and
yeah,
learning
the
disabilities
whole idea
were four of them.
before they were calling people autistic, they would just say there's just the umbrella term, they call them retarded. When that was still kind of a medical term. And but what I took away from it was they were in Yuba County, California, which is the upper part of the Central Valley. It's typically a really, really it's a rural community, based all on nut orchards, rice paddies. Those are the things that are farmed there. It's a farming community, olives, all sorts of stuff. Stuff that grows on trees does really well there. It's where all the almonds come from in California. There's even like a heavy Indian Sikh community there because that's what they were known for in their home country. So a lot of them immigrated there. But typically it's a poor community. At one point in that show, they talk about how during the 70s, at one point it had the highest concentration of ex felons who'd been released from prison in the whole state of California. So that's pretty a pretty high number. And yeah, it's the Highway 99 corridor runs from the top of LA. When you get out of the San Fernando Valley, you go over the Grapevine, the Central Valley starts. Highway 99 goes through every major city in the Central Valley in California. So Bakersfield, then it goes up to Fresno, you hit Modesto, you hit all those, and you come to Chico is the big one, is a big one, Redding, and then it kind of ends at the top of Redding and you get into the mountains before you go to Oregon. So it's a huge area. But yeah, so I went to college at Chico State University in Northern California, and it is always been known as like a big party school. It was tons of fun going there. But I don't know, where was I going with that?
The area that you're so familiar with.
Yeah. So yeah, that's just kind of what I wanted to get into. It's a poor area, and then you heard the interviews with the people there, and they have that they're Okies. They moved from Oklahoma, where
Yeah, and
Julia's from.
I'm from Oklahoma, and before I moved here, I spent a large portion of my life in Kentucky, and my family grew up in like the Appalachian Mountains. So when I was actually listening to the podcast, it was a little homey for me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I get it. Like these are just normal salt of the earth, down to earth people. And I was surprised at, I think some of them, it sounded more like Asperger's to me, or
Yeah.
like very
The
mild form of like.
men.
Yeah, and they was oh well they were retarded, and I was like, well, it doesn't even sound like they were driving cars.
Right.
They
They
were
had part-time jobs.
they
No, they had
had jobs.
full-time jobs. They had like good jobs working for PG&E and doing it. That's the one point I was trying to make. Sorry to interrupt,
Yeah,
guys.
go ahead.
Is that even though they're from, it's like in the 70s, they're getting called retarded, and they're in this like kind of economically depressed farm community. There still seem to be these like really good programs for them that probably work
Yeah.
way better than what they're making at autistic people do today. You know, like they're what they were describing those guys as doing. They had like working class jobs and were bringing home a paycheck and were going out to play sports and go to games and have a ton of fun. I mean, they're describing what like the average 30-year-old millennial man can't do today, you know.
Right. And it just and the reason I like stress that so much is I feel like it gets dismissed because it's so easy to just say they got discombobulated and lost
Yeah.
in the mountains because maybe they had, it seemed as though maybe they had a level of mental dysfunction, but it's not really that. Like these guys were smart enough to be driving cars, working jobs, having family relationships and community relationships. So I don't think that had a huge factor. Now, one guy, Gary Mathias, had schizophrenia. So that's not even close to like.
Intellectually, I mean, he didn't have any, he wasn't diminished
Right.
at all. He just had this,
And he had been in Vietnam as
Yeah, he
well.
was in the army. So
Yeah,
obviously he was,
discharged, but
yeah, capable enough to be in the army. So, and I just want to say the names of the men were Bill Sterling, he was 29, Jack Hewitt was 24, Ted Weher was 32, Jack Madruga 30, and Gary Mathias 25. And listening to the podcast, they say the name Jack a lot, but there was two Jacks. So I just wanted, sometimes I'll just say by their last name to not cause confusion. But If you want, I can just kind of walk you through like a play by play, and then I can talk about what I think happened at the end.
Fantastic. And
So,
I'll pipe in every once in a while. Deborah, you
yeah.
can as well.
Deborah, break in if you have any questions, and obviously if anything comes up, just ask me and we can talk about that a little bit too. But it's
And
February
I go,
1970.
if you have any questions about the landscape or anything, let me know because
Oh
I know
yeah,
it all.
for sure, for sure. Because I'm not familiar with California like that. So in my mind, the way she was describing it, and we'll get into that too, was like real mountainous. And I always picture California like beaches and palm trees. So like as she was describing it, I was like, oh, that sounds like really weird, but it's important. So it's kind of like you were saying, they wanted to go to the Chico State. It was like a basketball game.
Yeah, use
They were
their
all on a basketball team together.
yeah.
Right.
Their favorite team was UC Davis. Davis is another Central Valley city. UC Davis is a real renowned college. That's where my father went. My dad played baseball for him in the 60s. And then it's about 2 hours south of Chico. So and it's kind of a rural suburb of Sacramento.
So it would have taken them 2 hours to get to the game.
No, because their favorite team was UC Davis, but they were coming from, I think Olivehurst is that the name of the town? So they're
Yes.
pretty. I think they said it was about an hour to Chico where they're
Yeah,
coming from.
50 miles from where they lived.
50 miles. Okay, so not a huge stretch.
Yeah, they were expected home that night and had a basketball game the following morning. Because
there was like some type of like they were doing like a vacation giveaway or something to whoever won the competition they were going to compete in. So they were all excited, like, oh yeah, and we're going to go watch this basketball game.
Yeah, because they
So
thought they were going to be able to get to go meet Sally Struthers, who was like the Special
yeah,
Olympic spokesperson. She
yes,
was
that's
supposed
right.
was Deborah. Deborah was Sally Struthers, like considered like a hot chick at the time back then, because she was on All in the Family.
Briefly at the beginning, she was considered a hot chick. Yeah,
Got it.
hottie, hottie patati. So they were all excited about that. And basically, so their car was found 4 days after the trip to go watch the basketball game, and it was abandoned. Then a lot of moms of these men start freaking out, you know, because they know their sons. They know if they say they're going to go to a basketball game and come right home, that's exactly what's going to happen. And if you've ever met someone who is autistic, which I have some family members who are, they don't fuck around with their schedule. And like, excuse my language, but they don't. They do not fuck around. If they say they're going to be there at 3 o'clock and that you get there at 3:01, they're pissed. Like, it's very structured. So if they told their mom they were going to see a basketball game and then they would be home later that night, you best believe they're going to be home that night. So the moms already know something's wrong. So they start wanting to call the police. Like, hey, our boys are missing. But the police again are like, oh, it's those boys, quote unquote, the slow ones. And they didn't really care that they were missing. And then they were like, well, if they don't show up within like how X many hours, call us back. And they never showed up, obviously. And it went on for months, this search.
Well, it was called off. I mean, they searched for 2 days and then called it off due to snow conditions.
Right. And but the family's kind of like they never stopped searching because like even if the police weren't gonna help, they were still gonna be out there. And I mean, psychics got involved, tip lines and rewards were involved. And anytime you put out a reward for information, you're gonna start getting people who just want the cash. So I think some of the tips that came in during the search were kind of like, ah, maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. Maybe they just wanted an extra $2,500
Yeah, there's a
because,
lot of meth involved in that area of the country as well. So, you
yeah.
know, a lot of desperate tweakers hoping to get the money.
Because at one point somebody called and with a tip, and they were like, "We saw him at this gas station, and they were in a red pickup truck," which was not the car that they were driving. They none of them had a red pickup truck, and that oh, and they were using the payphone, and but nobody ever got a call, so that's odd. If you were missing from your family and you had an opportunity to get a pickup truck and a telephone, why wouldn't you call your family? And where did you get the truck from? So I think a lot of those tips were like, yeah, maybe they'll believe that and I'll get some extra scratch. So, and the psychics were pretty vivid too. They were, oh, and I see them in a tent or in a cabin, which was pretty close.
Partially.
Yeah. And I think even a guy went up the mountain where they like a couple miles from the car, and he had like dowsing rods. And
Yeah, he was
was,
like a water witcher guy.
yes, that was very interesting because he was just kind of letting the dowsing rods maybe guide him to where these men were. They didn't end up finding anything, but so the search goes on and on and on. And obviously, four of them were eventually found dead in strange circumstances. And the fifth one, to this day, nobody knows.
And it was the one guy who was not intellectually.
Gary Mathias.
Are you, did you, in what, I don't know what show that you guys all watched type. So did they talk about Joe Shonas?
Yes. So that's the first thing that had me like so upset because they supposedly got stranded on this mountainside. And this guy, what was his name? Joseph?
Joe Sho Shones. I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Oh,
Shonas.
that's the bullshitter guy.
No, that's the guy who
Yeah.
had the heart attack.
Yeah,
Yeah,
the
I think
guy that
he's a
was full of
bullshitter.
shit.
I think he's a
Oh, you
bullshitter.
think so?
Because
Okay.
he was like one of those community guys where they waddle around town half drunk, just
Yeah,
spouting off at the
just
mouth.
constantly drunk. He
Oh.
said his story was, so what happens is they go to the game, people see him at the game. Then they go to a liquor store in Chico. After the game, they buy an incredible amount of snacks.
Candy.
Yeah. And then the store clerk woman, she re reports seeing them all. They're all in good spirits, and none of them seemed in distress at all. And that's the last time that they were definitively seen.
In my notes here, I have that it was shortly before 10 p.m. And then obviously that's the last person whoever saw them before they find the bodies, obviously. But the car was discovered more than 70 miles from Chico in the wrong direction. That is very important.
And not only is it like they got turned around. To back to where they're from would have been a straight shot. The landscape all around them, they're in the valley. They're in the Central Valley farmland. It's just flat. As soon as you start, they got to go up Highway 70 into the Plumas National Forest. I used to be a wildland firefighter there, and I lived in the town of Quincy, which is the county seat of Plumas County. And they Once you start, you go to Oroville, you start heading up the mountain up Highway 70. Beautiful road, great motorcycle road. If you ever get a chance to ride it, it's fantastic. You would know that you're not going the right way when
Yeah, and
two
just on that
miles up the
point,
hill, and they go all the way up the hill.
the park ranger said that The car was parked on the side of Orville Quincy Road that runs through the Plumas National Forest. So that makes a lot of sense. Like they would know, based on what you're saying, that they're in the wrong fucking direction and they're not accomplishing
And
their
there was
goal.
snow. There's never snow on the valley floor. It'd be rare. You might see like it might snow a tiny bit, but it would not usually ever stick. You know, you'd see it every maybe 10 years. It would be like, oh, it snowed in the valley today.
And on that, I'm so glad you brought that up because it's just like the Dyatlov Pass, like with them being barefoot, like it's 0 degrees in the Dyatlov Pass. You're not going anywhere without your boots on, like heavy bundled up, like you're gonna die of hypothermia. So the boys' parents said that they all left wearing windbreakers.
Not
So
dressed for.
why would they? And then when they found the car, it had gas. Nothing mechanically wrong with the car that would have caused them to get out.
Yeah, they said it was a little bit stuck in the snow, but would have just been really,
Yeah,
really
would have
easy
been
to push
easy.
out.
Just push it right out. And also, you got to think like, see, Sterling and Madruga's fathers confirmed that both their sons absolutely hated the cold
Hated
and
the outdoors.
hated spending time outdoors. So they're on the side of a snowy mountain in a windbreaker, and they decide we're going to get out of the car and just start walking.
Right.
Why?
Walking up, back
Up,
up the hill, not back down where they
continuing
came
up,
from.
continuing in the wrong direction.
With and they left the window down in the car.
For
Which
what?
Magruder's mom said was really unlike him. That was the car was his pride and joy. He would never leave it unlocked. He would never leave it with the window down in a snowstorm.
And that's when that Joseph Schoen's guy comes in because he's like, oh, well, I was out there too, and my car got stuck, and I had a heart attack. And then
He's driving a
you
Volkswagen Bug. Not like a
in the
Baja Bug, but
snow.
yeah, I know the bar that he left. I used to drive by that bar all the time. He's a local drunk. He will go do anything to make anybody every local knows him. He just wants people to hear his bullshit stories. And his story is that he was going up to scout out a ski
Oh,
trip with his family after a night at 10 o'clock of
10 p.m.
drinking.
Yeah, it's perfect time to go.
Yeah, and so everybody knows that he's full of shit. He doesn't ski, he's a fat guy, he doesn't do anything athletic, so
No, he probably if and he was in the hospital when the police got to him. So I think maybe, yeah, sure, he did have a heart attack or something of the sort. Maybe he thought he was having a heart attack
he
once
was able
he
to walk 8 miles from where his car was stuck in the snow.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't hold water like whatsoever because this is one of those guys that's like will just make up stories for the hell of it, like just to hear themselves speak kind of guy. So the whole, oh, I saw him and they approach, like hearing the story, it almost sounded like he was gonna say like the next thing that happened was like Noah rode up in the ark and like all the animals like came down and there was this like it was just like outlandish, this story. Even the heart attack part was like, okay, you had a heart attack, but you were able to then walk X amount of miles and then do all the it was like why and how. So I quickly kind of like dismissed the whole Joseph Schoen's story.
He also said that there was a woman, six men, and a woman with a baby.
Like what were you hallucinating at that point? I mean, maybe he did have a heart attack and he was just seeing Jesus and all kinds of things, but it didn't make any sense to me. So then I think that was when they started asking for information and they put that reward out. It started off as like $1,000. And then they were like, all right, let's up it. We'll do like $2,500. And then people started coming out of the woodwork. Now, one of the things that caught my attention was a lady who claimed to be getting mysterious phone calls. Deb, did you hear about the phone calls?
I heard about the phone calls. I read
and
about
she,
them.
She had no relation to anybody in the case at all, but she starts getting these strange heavy breather phone calls. And what do they tell her, Julia?
So the first, she's sitting in like her kitchen or something. The phone rings. She picks it up. And it's like you said, the heavy, like, and then those five guys, I know where they're at. And then it just like clicks off. And she's like, oh shit, what's this? Some kind of a sexual, like, what is that going on? Couple days go by. I think she actually calls the police and says, hey, I got a weird, like, breather phone call. Couple days go by, or maybe even a couple weeks, she gets another one. Phone rings, she picks it up. Hey, those five guys, they're all dead. And click. And she's like, what the fuck? Calls the police again. They say, all right, if they call again, record it. And then I'm not sure if she got a third phone call
the next day.
Okay,
the
Deborah,
very next
what was
day.
The What was the third phone call?
The third phone call was, I wrote it down. Let me see if I can find it. Okay, here it is. Debbie Lynn Reese. Next day he called and said, they're all dead.
They're all dead.
The second call, he said, I hurt those guys.
Yes.
And the third call said, They're all dead.
I think it was the person, the actual person. In my opinion, I think it was the perpetrator.
Call. Why do you think he picked her number?
I think it was one of those. So I remember a story where it was like the niece or the cousin or the sister or someone of Matthias saw him at a diner, like a truck stop diner. And she comes around the corner and was like, oh my God, like, it's you.
And it was crazy. It was hard to keep track of all the names and everything, but yeah, it was one of the dead boy's sisters years later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is at the bar that's owned by her mother, the mm-hmm. mother of one of the dead of one of the five. She says she sees Gary Matthias sitting at the end of the bar.
Ooh.
On her way to the bathroom. She freaks out, goes and runs to her mom, and they go back and he's gone.
Oh my God. Yeah, I hadn't read about that
she
one.
She called to him.
Yeah.
She was like, Gary, like, oh my God, like, Gary, like, it's you. And then she like turns around and he's gone.
Yeah.
So I believe, if you know what you've done, you also suffer from schizophrenia. Sometimes you just need like an outlet, not somebody you know, not somebody who is ever going to know your voice or even what the situation is. You just go phone book, random number. They live in this town. Maybe they'll understand what this message means. And they'll tell the parents of these people that I just killed or had something to do with. And then at least the families can get some type of closure because they'll know that they're dead. So he calls. He's schizophrenic anyway. So he's paranoid. He's definitely not going to call like a member of their family or something like that. He's going to call a complete stranger. So he calls him up. Hey, don't look for the boys. They're dead. And hangs up the phone like, oh, maybe that message will get back to the family, but I also don't want to be recognized in any way.
You think that's why he said there were five?
Yeah, that's very
included
specific.
Himself in that number.
Yeah, so I do think it was probably Gary Matthias.
That's what most of the families think. And he was violent.
Yeah.
But did you hear about what his friend Janet said? Longtime friend Janet said that he told her numerous times that he dreamed he and several men would disappear and die.
So do you think, and this is me speculating. He had an episode, broke out into a fantasy type of rage, or maybe even convinced the other guys, like, let me take you to this spot, or let me show you this area. There's like camping, and like, we'll go, whatever. They get to the spot, and he's leading them in a dazed, fantasy-like paranoia state, and it eventually leads to the death of these men because they get lost up there, and then they're not fully dressed. Hypothermia sets in, and I'll get into a little bit on how each individual passed, but he gets out because he's either, one, planned this all in his head, like fantasized about it, or two, he's like, I'll go get help, and never comes back.
That's the hard part for me to make that make sense, is that when we get in, we go back and talk about the routine that all these autistic guys are stuck to. How would he convince these guys to just, they were so excited for their basketball game the next day. How would he have convinced them non-violently to end up there?
I thought about that. At the gas station.
I mean, you can't like tell them, oh, there's all these chicks up here or anything. Guys aren't interested in that. Guys aren't interested in that. They're right. Interested in playing basketball.
Basketball.
So
eating candy. Maybe you told them there's Smarties up there or something.
Cosmic Peach analysis. At the gas station, he volunteers to drive.
That would make sense.
Hey, buddy, let me drive. Don't even worry about, you know, I see better at night anyways. You have some snacks. We'll play the radio. We'll talk. I'll drive. Don't even worry about it.
And I know a shortcut.
I know. Yeah. And then he drives them out there.
That makes sense.
The car gets a little bit stuck. They might have, and the wheels start spinning a little bit. He's like, oh, come on, guys. That's my bad. Like, oh, let's get out of the car. He's kind of already got this fantasy in his head about this event happening. And he's like, well, let's just, you know, we'll go up this mountain a little ways. Maybe we'll find something. And he's like the ringleader, literally, of the pack.
Yeah.
Not saying that they're like so slow and dumb that they, but obviously one person is going to be more of like a dominant personality. He's army. He's already violent, kind of like that super masculine, like, you guys are going to listen to me. We're in a crisis situation. We're going to head up this mountain. And the other ones are like in windbreakers, like, oh shit. Like, okay, maybe we'll find like somebody who can help us get our car unstuck or whatever. They're following Matthias. He's probably the one that drove them the fuck out there. My theory. I wasn't there. I can't say like 100% this is what happened, but it just makes logical sense to me. If they're going to drive in the opposite direction, probably the perpetrator's driving the car.
Yeah, makes sense.
I don't know. Where are you guys on that?
Well, that's most of the four other men, their families all felt like that's what happened, that he got violent, because he was violent. He had many violent outbreaks.
Maybe he, I mean, I didn't even think, maybe he whacked them all in the head.
Well, they didn't. Well, I guess, I mean, they, let's go back to where they're lost and then they eventually get found. I don't remember hearing that there was any damage to the remains.
Yeah, but enough time had passed, Deborah, that
yeah, I think some time back, had
like
passed.
Getting, he hit somebody in the head with a stick, they could pass out. It gives you enough time to drive 15 minutes up the road at least. And
so they were found 3 months later. So that probably was enough time for whatever. But if you listen to like the podcast episode that I listened to, it, I think it's called just Yuba County 5.
Yeah, I'll look it up podcast. So I can reference it and let everybody know, because it's where I got most of my stuff
Adam
from.
Adam sent it to me, so I was really excited about it. And the way that the moms described the other four men is like they were like big sweethearts.
Yeah.
Like kind of not just dopey, but like almost like, okay, Gary, like if you say that's what we need to do, like I trust you, you're my buddy, you're my friend, like you wouldn't do something to purposely mislead us into the woods and leave our bodies to rot for 3 months. My friend, they put their trust in him because they almost had like a childlike innocence about them, like you're my buddy, like we do everything together. You wouldn't purposely put me in this harmful situation. But Gary Mathias had like this split personality where he could be that sweet guy who's your buddy, who's your pal, but then he could snap and like literally become like the shark from Jaws.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had talked, his family will try to defend him and say like, well, you know, he'd had these episodes in the past, but that's when his meds were wrong and we'd got him right. Yeah. And the thing is, meds are only right if somebody's taking them, even if you got it figured out. And
that's my thought too.
Recently, before that, a little bit before, he had been, because he was still partying around town, he would hang out with like normal people and go to parties and drink and do drugs. And he had been kicked out of parties and like would just like hang out, like look in the windows and say, oh, he's going to kill everybody in there and stuff like that. So he was definitely susceptible to these violent episodes, these violent schizophrenic episodes.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like he led him up the mountain and then like hacksawed him or something like that. I think maybe he almost had like this come to Jesus moment after he got them up to the top of the mountain and was like, ooh, what do I do? I kind of feel guilty for leading them up here. He didn't like kill them and stab them and hack their bodies up like a serial murderer, but he was like, I'm just going to go get help, guys, and then left and never came back, and they died like in to the elements, really. A lot of them died. So, like, some of them had like toes missing, a couple of them.
Let's get into that, because that's a big, big part of the story is how everybody was found.
Yeah. So it's like a dad and like his son.
But I just I'm sorry to interrupt. One thing I want to reiterate, the car had gas. It was running. They could have gotten it back down. They could right. have. But they made a different choice.
Yeah. And I think that's like that pack or like herd mentality kind of thing, where if we all stay together, we'll make it. But they put their trust in just like the wrong, absolutely the wrong person.
Yeah.
And he could have even convinced them like, oh, we're never going to get this car out of the snow. We got to find help. You guys got to follow me. We're going to go up this mountain. And that's really what it looked like in the conditions that they were found. So they were, a couple of them were discovered in this trailer in a...
In a campground, kind of
a campground.
It's
yeah.
a Forest Service trailer, but it was it had been used probably in the past to house seasonal workers. Like they'd have like a trail crew, like college kids would go be on a trail crew in the summer, and you go and you maintain trails, and then at night they probably all go back to the bunkhouse, and that's where they would have stayed. But it was kind of an abandoned one that hadn't been used in a long time. It was full of canned food,
dehydrated
MREs,
food.
Military rations, all sorts of provisions that would have kept them alive for like
a butane tank,
the whole winter.
Matches.
They could have heat on and everything,
and warm clothes,
right?
In that place, also. But now, I read that just one.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Deborah.
I read that just one was found there, although there were shoes from somebody else.
Yeah, that's the weird part. So. Go, Julia.
Yeah, and I in that podcast, it said that a lot of those things that you guys were talking about, the necessary things that would have kept them alive, like heat, food. They were in like a locked shed.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes to my point as where they would have followed Gary, is that they knew breaking and entering into the shed was like, oh, that's a bad thing. We shouldn't be breaking into somebody else's thing or whatever. Like, that's how the dads described it. Was like, they would have never stolen or broken locks or rummaged through sheds. Like, that wasn't part, like, they knew better than that. Like, we had raised them, like, you don't steal, you don't break stuff, you don't break into other people's property, you don't do so. They literally died before they would break a lock.
Yeah.
So that goes again to my point where it's like, they trusted that their friend was leading them to safety, and he left them for dead, is what he did. And one of them, the one that was found, was Ted Weher. And he was like wrapped in like blankets and stuff. He was trying to stay warm. He had like no toes. His toes had froze off. And
that's so crazy. I didn't know that if you got frostbite that bad, that your digits would fall off.
Yeah.
I thought they would like rot off, but I guess they just like clean fall off. There was toes on the floor in there.
Wild.
And he was tucked in, wrapped in sheets, like someone else had to do it.
Yeah.
He didn't like cover, he didn't cover himself. And he was.
Toes would have been, that would have been really painful to have the sheet touching his feet, but they were tucked in.
Mm-hmm.
So he and probably didn't do that himself.
And he was dead from starvation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 13 weeks, I think he somehow managed to live for 13 weeks, according, you know, to his beard growth. And he lost 100 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Crazy. So he was like a skeleton, really. Like, that's how they described him. Like, he was starved and frozen to death. But he would have done that rather than break into something and steal provisions.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to paint the picture for people who are like, why in the world? And they had a shed full of shit. Because they had a childlike innocence about them. They weren't busting into sheds. They weren't stealing stuff. They were doing the best that they could with the little bit that they had, with hypothermia and windbreakers, with their toes freezing off. Like, at that point, some type of like, you'd think survival mode would kick in, but they were just doing the best they could, like trying to help each other, giving each other clothes. I think they were probably swapping shoes and stuff. And two of them broke off and were like, all right, now for real, we're going to get help. And they died kind of like off by the road. And so searching like the surrounding area, leading to, I think it was like down the hill or something like that, they found the scattered remains of Madruga and Sterling. And they were between where the car had been abandoned and the cabin. So they were like,
what was the overall distance from the cabin to the car?
I don't have that one in my notes.
Was it pretty far, like a couple miles?
Yeah, it was pretty a good hike for sure.
Yeah, because
Deborah's got it.
Okay. And who was the fourth that they found? Where was he?
So Jack Hewitt was found 2 days after that. And his own father was the one who found a human spine around 2 miles from the trailer. And it was his clothing that was on the skeleton. So they knew it was him. And Madruga had the car keys in his pocket. And they said that Madruga and Sterling died of hypothermia. And obviously Jack did too, but he was in a separate area.
And the two that were found together had always been like best
Always best
friends,
friends.
inseparable. And one of the psychics has said that she saw like two of the boys dead together or something like that.
Yeah.
And their family was, I know, said, I know it was those two.
How heartbreaking is that?
Yeah. Yeah,
Just
and then the
trying
fact
to
that
be good people.
his dad found him. His dad was like a real, salt of the
He's
earth,
a
like you said,
sweetheart.
oaky guy, and like he described, like he came home from the army, and it's crazy because yeah, he has like an Appalachian accent, but he's from California, Northern California, and he's talking about how he got home from the army, and his baby was I can't remember how old, but old, a little older, and he hadn't met him yet because he'd been
The
in
service,
the service
yeah.
somewhere else, and he came back and like was like, that boy's not right. And I thought it was gonna go somewhere bad from there, but then it ended up the guy was just like from a different time, but really, really loved his son, Like I one time that his these are awesome people. They let their supposedly retarded kid have a motorcycle that he wanted.
Yeah.
He got busted riding it on the freeway with no helmet on. The cops bring him home, and the they go to him, is your son retarded? And he goes, yeah, like that, and just is, and he said, all I did, I told him not to ride on the freeway anymore. If he wants to ride on the freeway, he's got to stay on the shoulder. It's like right
Yeah.
on.
And one of them, I'm not sure which one, but one of them would drive a car. I assume it was a car, maybe it was the motorcycle guy, and he'd see the stop sign, but why do I need to stop? I don't need to stop. So he
Right,
would just go
and
right.
I think one of the moms was telling a story. Actually, it was the dad, the Oki dad, and he said, I was in the car and I asked him if a car was coming, and he said no. And I went to pull out and it was a truck. And he said, you asked me if a car was coming, not a truck. And it was
Yeah.
like that. I almost relate it to, and this is like kind of a bad example, but in Forrest Gump, when the mom goes to the school and she's like, no, my kid's going to regular school. Like, there's nothing wrong with him. Like, that's kind of how the parents were. They let them just live normal lives. And they were like, literally, my kid is going to do what all the other kids are doing. They're fine. They're out here living life, their best life, you know? So I just feel like the whole time, even in the newspaper, it was kind of, they were misleading people to believe that five guys escaped from a crazy house in a car and got lost up in the mountain somewhere, and it just was not like that. So I mean,
Did
it's
you
probably
know
definitely Matthias though.
Yeah.
Matthias at one point moved from Marysville to Portland to live with his grandma. And he was
Yeah.
on the phone, and his parents said, just come home. Just please come home. And he just hangs up on him. And I don't remember how many days later, he knocks on their door. He had walked from Portland to Marysville.
Yeah, it's like 500 miles.
So that takes a different type of psyche right there. So
Yeah.
walking up this mountain for him, that's the thing. He was like, fine. And these other guys, they're not used to this, so they're obviously going to be the most susceptible to like something like this happening. And even I think Weyher's brother has adamantly stated it was Gary Mathias. Y'all motherfuckers ain't listening. It was Gary Mathias. And even the county sheriff believes that it was Gary Mathias. And he said that he believed that the men were forced or manipulated up the mountain by Gary Mathias. And the parents or the loved ones of Gary Mathias say, kind of like what Adam was saying, oh, he was not. And that's fine. If my brother, I don't have kids, so the closest relationship to me would be like my brother. And they're like, it was definitely your brother, Julie. He definitely killed those guys, or he's the reason. I'd be like, you don't understand, my brother's not like that. I would die on the sword defending my family, you know. But in the back of my mind, if I knew, like, if my brother was like Gary Mathias, I'd be like, I'm not gonna tell you he has crazy episodes and freaks out and has rage. And like, I'm not gonna tell you that. Like, they're defending their family. So, of course, they're not gonna say it was definitely my son who did this. So you almost have to like disregard the bias of like, of course they love their son. Of course they're protecting their family. Of course they don't want to think he's capable of this. But in that situation, I would say neither did Jeffrey Dahmer's parents. Neither did Ted Bundy's parents. Like, they were shocked at this. Oh my God, the despicable. So yeah, you're not going to be able to go off the family's testimony on that. You have to judge people completely 100% based off of their actions. And we knew he was crazy.
And violent.
So you think he gets them pretty early on in this whole adventure? How early on do you think they ended up at the trailer? Same night, next
Shortly after.
day? Yeah, because they wouldn't have been able to survive out in the elements for very long.
I think all of them were in the tra all four of them were in the trailer at one point. And maybe they were in there for a few days. And then two of them broke off.
Well, the Gary probably takes off first, as I know how to go get help, leaves, fucks off, is gone forever. The other two.
Yeah, or even vice versa. Like maybe the two go off and the two stay. And then the two other ones never come back. So Ted's in no position to be walking because his toes are freezing off. So he's like, Ted, I'm going to go looking for the other two boys. You stay here. Then he dies.
Yeah, I'll tuck you in before I leave. I'll go find whoever.
Jack and yeah, because you almost have to think they're using the buddy system at that point. Like, two break off and they're like, hey, we'll be back. We're going to go get some help. But they die. And it'll be a couple more days. And I think it was Jack Hewitt. He's like, hey, they didn't ever come back. Ted, buddy, like, you're not looking so good, man. Maybe I'll go find them where they went, or I'll just go get help. And then he dies. Nobody comes back for Ted. Ted dies.
What
So,
about what do you got, Deborah?
I was just going to say how sad if he actually, did make it 13 weeks. That's a very long time to be, by yourself in a cabin in the snow.
And he's the only one who had shelter the whole time. So that part, while it's horrendous, wouldn't surprise me that he was able to last way longer than the other guys who were kind of like trying to trek off in wet, like little hoodie
Yeah,
t-shirts
little
and
elf in the elements,
right, they're goners for sure. But Ted, and God love, how long did he stay in there just waiting for somebody to find him? And that's why the heinous situation in itself would be enough for me. If somebody was accusing my loved one, I'd be like, no freaking way they did this to these poor guys, you know? But why is he the only person they never find, but shows up at a mom and pop diner years later, just sitting there eating a pulled pork sandwich?
And
Do you
was
see a
that
brain?
in the Marysville area or near where they?
Yes.
Why would he go back there?
And it was owned by one of the
Yeah,
mothers and her husband.
why
I
would
do
he?
remember her saying like he had the same glasses, but his face, it was different. Like, maybe he had grown his hair out, he had grown a beard out, and he was wearing some different clothes, almost kind of like trying to camouflage. And at some point, you got to think he wants to return home to something familiar. So maybe he was like, oh, they probably won't even recognize me. I'll just stop in. And then, of course, she sees him and she's like, oh, Gary. And he bolts out the door, never to be seen again. So he didn't make that mistake again.
Right. And why would he bolt if he wasn't Gary, if she was mistaken? And why would he bolt if he was Period. Innocent?
Yes. You would think he'd be elated for yeah. like, oh my God, like my people. Oh my God, I want to see my mom and my dad. No. Because he, and also that's why I think he made those phone calls, because he was so guilty at some point. It's like you come down from that rage and that crazy, like almost hypnotic state of mind, and you're like, what the F did I just do? I gotta tell someone. They're still out looking for them. I know they're dead. So he makes the call. Hey, you don't gotta bother looking for those guys. Like, in a weird, freaky way, trying to give closure to the families.
Yeah. Maybe, trying to relieve his karmic debt or something like that. Another thing that was covered, though, later on in the show was that a local Christian pastor who had been, he was a real born-again guy. He had been in prison and done a bunch of really bad stuff, kind of admitted during a sermon that he was the one who was responsible for the disappearance of the five boys. Do you remember that part, Julia?
Yes, and I have a theory on that as well. I think he was a sociopath, and a lot of sociopaths become pastors or any type of figure where people look up to you and like almost exonerate you and like build you up. They love those stroked. So sociopaths do end up in positions like that. Nothing against, if you love to go to church, I'm sure your pastor's a great guy. This guy was not. And he loved people worshiping him. So I almost feel like he was that guy who confessed to all those murders that he didn't really commit. You know, that guy, and they'd be like, we'll buy you a milkshake if you confess to this murder. And
Henry Lee Lucas.
Yeah, he's like a Henry Lee Lucas to me, because there was some weird stuff about bodies being, they tossed them in the lake, and it was like, no, they didn't. Like, you guys are just talking at this point.
Yeah, there was rumors that he was thrown off the Orville Dam, which is a huge dam, and you cross like this, you actually cross over. It's like a little mini, what's the one in Las Vegas?
I don't know the name of it, but I know exactly what you're talking
about. Yeah, it's Hoover. It's like a little mini Hoover Dam. You like the bridge is like it's a big bridge. You go over the top and then the lake's below, or Lake Orville's a big lake. Yeah. And it was just, it was cool to hear it through this lens now of like knowing where, listening to a more in-depth show that got into it. And, the one thing too is, after all the episodes ended, they had a couple bonus episodes, and they make reference to the fact that the case has been reopened, maybe, and a person of interest has been named.
Really?
Yeah, and they don't say who it is, but yeah, something like that. Did you hear that part?
I listened to one of the bonus episodes at the end where she was interviewing, I think it was someone who actually had their own podcast or something
that. She interviewed a couple of the authors who were writing books about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is as far as I got with like the bonus content, but I would compare this again, and you guys can take it or leave it. But when they say new information has been found, new suspects have been named, it's kind of to, one, re-traumatize everyone by bringing the story up again, and two, they do this with all of them. They did this with JonBenet Ramsey and continue to do this with JonBenet Ramsey. They do this with like Natalie Holloway. They do it like, oh, we got a new suspect in the bit. They're like bringing this story and rehashing it again. So it's almost like a ritual at this point, where they have to keep re-traumatizing us with, like, that's why, and this is going, Deb, Deborah more in a conspiratorial way, but the reason they keep making Jeffrey Dahmer documentaries and freaking movies and Ted Bundy movies and Gacy movies, like, why do we have to rehash this over and over and over? Like, we know what they did. Why? And the families of, like, the Jeffrey Dahmer victims came forward after the Netflix documentary, and they were like, do you want to know how we feel?
Yeah.
That stuff's not even true. And we just have to relive it with some parts the truth and some parts lies, and look in grotesque detail what he did to our sons and our brothers. And
yeah, you know, and maybe not the sickest part of the whole documentary, but one of the really gross things they did is they, like, tried to force this woke social justice narrative into the end. They show, like, Jesse Jackson giving a speech where he's talking about black and brown people.
Oh,
I
yes.
Guarantee you, in the early 90s, Jesse Jackson was not saying black and brown people. That wasn't in the vernacular back then.
Afro-Americans, and they weren't. And that's another good point, is they also bring these tragedies back up so they can push a narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like your theory. I mean, I think it's the one that makes the most sense. What's is Gary still out there? What's he up to?
I think he's probably still alive. He's probably old as hell somewhere in a bar.
think he's still shooting hoops?
Yeah, he's probably out there doing something, but I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to bring this up for the rest of time, because they love, and they being these people who admire these type of stories, they love to have unsolvable, quote unquote, crimes. The more unsolvable it is, the more they can draw people into it. And if they just came out and said, closed case, we believe it was Gary Mathias, what's the intrigue behind that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have to keep us, and they found a new suspect, just like JonBenet. I have a whole episode coming out on this. You guys are going to love it.
Ooh.
But this is an easily solvable case if you take into consideration the behavior of Gary Mathias and how they tried to, like, divert onto, like, the pastor guy. And then it was some, Adam, wasn't it some, like, gangster guy or something that tossed the body in the lake? Or
yeah, some local drug dealers. Yeah, there was some, like, there's a couple things. They talk about the local pastor as, like, he was, like, the town bully. And people knew who he was. The families knew who he was. And then they also talk about just some local kind of hillbilly organized crime, you know, meth stuff, probably.
This pastor, so he makes this statement to his congregation.
Yeah.
And so they all go, all right, well, let's call the police and tell them we know who did it. And then the police get involved. What did they do to this guy?
I can't remember.
I hope
they did zip about it. That's why I always say, like, when they bring another suspect in, it's to keep the case going and to keep, like, sucking your energy, trying to, like, oh my God, it never ends.
But yeah, who knows? Maybe if we look at it from that perspective, maybe the Yuba County Sheriff's Department needs some extra state funding. They dig up these cold cases and say they've got a new suspect, you know, they get funneled some money.
Really good point. Yeah. Seriously, Adam, that's an excellent point. We'll just dig up this quote unquote unsolvable case about the Yuba County Five, and we'll get some extra funding our way. They love these unsolvable cases like that. It's like a never-ending deep rabbit hole of money and trauma and the poor families. Yeah. That's all I have to say. Like, yeah, I'm glad that they were able to have closure knowing that they could bury their sons, because that to me is at least half of the battle is, yes, you want to know who did this to them, but at least you have somewhere where you can go and visit on Christmas or birthdays and place flowers. Like, to me, that's very important, knowing that they've been laid to rest. So that I'm glad that they were able to have that. I just wish they would have not turned it into Clue or like a choose your own adventure mystery out of it. You know what I mean? Because that's like just to sell it at this point, because they really could have the documentary followed Gary Mathias a little bit better and came to like a roundabout conclusion. Like, this is the only guy who lived, who was actually spotted years later, diverted, like ran out of the building, didn't even say anything. So we can judge based on that he's probably the main prime suspect. Story ends.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tragic thing about it is they get into a little bit of, in that show. And yeah, you're right. The show is just called the Yuba County Five. It's like an 8-part series. You know, it's one of those corporate kind of documentary podcasts. I enjoy listening to those every once in a while. A lot of true crime stuff. Yeah. But they just kind of go through the multi-generational blowback that happened to the families after this case happened. Like, these were their like beloved little brothers and cousins, and everybody loved these guys. They were such nice, innocent boys is what they call them. And you know, families people got divorced, people died early, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. So it's not just, you know, I always try to emphasize to Deborah that there's always like, especially in conspiracy stuff, but it goes to show you in this, even like 9/11, everything, you got to like, whatever action happens, you just got to keep following it down and down and down and down the line. And you'll see like unintended or intended consequences are so far away that you can trace back to such a different event happening, you know, but these families are still suffering to this day from what happened, yeah, you know, back then.
That's a really beautiful point you just made. And to go on that with a conspiracy type of topic like 9/11, Deborah, it is by design that they throw these curveballs at you so you don't ever figure out what the crap is going on. Literally, it would be like you're on the straight and narrow, you get too close to the truth, they throw a curveball at you and you're like, oh my god, what if that's a possibility? So they divert you into looking something different. Mm-hmm. But if you just keep on and you just get down to the very bare bones basics of the story, it's almost so simple, but they trick you with like all this, look over here, look over here, look at the left hand while the right hand does this. And you never feel like you get an answer because they throw so, you're inundated with like information and useless information. And you get to the point where you're like, I don't even care what happened.
Yeah. Deborah, do you have anything different than Juliana and I's theory?
No, that was what I went to. I mean, you know, his the families all of the other four boys all said that he was, well, we know that he was violent because many sources said that, but the family said that he wasn't really one of the foursome. He, you know, these two were best friends and these two were best friends. And then he kind of led them around.
Yeah.
And yeah. And the basketball coach of their team said he knew he was going to flip any second.
Really?
Yeah. And all the family said, you know, Matthias, is that how you say it? Matthias?
Yeah.
His family said that he, you know, had been on medication, was taking his medication. Everything was great for 2 years. Well, the coach saw a very different side of that.
Exactly. Who's to say he was taking the medication?
Right. You don't know. You don't know.
You don't know what that grown man is doing. Obviously, and he's going crashing parties and getting blasted and talking about murdering everybody at the party. Give me a break. What medication is he on?
Yeah, and it's that 70s medication too, which they didn't have it all figured out back then. It's probably lithium and Prozac or something like that. That
Yeah,
was the
they probably gave him like a toxic concoction that just made it worse, like
yeah.
Zoloft and like Rohypnol and all
Yeah,
the tranquilizers and
who know, maybe he, I mean, if we want to really get into it someday, we can, maybe he was some sort of LSD experiment in the army. Maybe it was Phoenix Project or something
yeah,
like
could
that,
be.
I considered they did some experiments on him that messed his head up.
And he was in, wasn't, was he in ever in prison?
He was.
Dude.
What
Dude, I
was he in
didn't even.
prison for? I didn't know that. What was he in prison for?
He beat somebody up or had like one of
Oh,
his rages
one
and
of his, yeah.
like attempted murder or something like that.
Yeah, and that's where they were doing all that stuff. Prison and the army and, University of
And
California.
I know Deborah loves the occult Laurel Canyon stuff.
Yeah.
I do.
And we're talking about in the 70s here, Deborah,
You're
the
right.
occult Laurel Canyon glory
Right
days.
in it.
Oh yeah, mind control, military operations, torture to death interrogations. We're talking about LSD experimentation. This dude was probably screwed up in the army. They probably conducted some kind of a study or test on him. He probably really didn't even have schizophrenia, which is why they couldn't fix it.
Well, you can't fix
MK-ULTRA.
schizophrenia anyway, but
Yeah,
you
or
can
the outburst that
manage it.
caused him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was by design, probably.
And I'll tell you, now that you say that, most schizophrenics are not violent.
I know a couple of schizophrenics, and they're almost like timid. So that's another, like, we could have even went into that further. I was so concentrated on like basically debunking the other theories and getting down to like the root suspect that I didn't really look into the him being in the army, but I do find it curious that it's California. Hey, how close is Yuba City to like the Sunset Strip? It's like way on the other side.
Yeah, it's far.
Yuba's north.
That would be a 8 hour drive.
8 hour drive.
Yeah.
Still off.
Sunset Strip's LA. I mean, California's, takes, how long does it take to get to the top to the bottom, Deborah? 10 hours. Yeah.
Well, it
So
takes 10 hours.
it's
Yeah.
six to 800 miles away. But, I mean, he was hitchhiking all around. I mean, he could walk 500 miles. Maybe he
And he
was.
was in the army where all of those Laurel Canyon idiots came from.
Yeah.
I know there has to be a connection there. I'm
Yeah.
just staring at my notes like maybe this is the missing link.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we just talked it through and it popped into our heads. That's awesome. That's the best way to start figuring stuff out. So
Yeah,
I
three or four of us get together on a podcast, we can solve all the world issues. That's why I love podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so glad we got to do this. This is I think this is a good place to stop it. We can continue doing more research and maybe do a part
Yeah,
two, or
let's.
I think these true crime ones are a lot of fun for me because Deborah actually talks. You can tell she's happy, she likes it, she's not on the verge of tears, So yeah. And I heard you might be coming on the Monday night show next week.
Yes, I am.
Me too. We're gonna be there together. I'm so
That's
excited.
freaking awesome.
Yeah, and another good, a little good thing today is I got an email from one of my favorite fans of my show, Rebecca Ann Sincula. She's one of our original fans who started emailing me, and she's from that area. She's from right by Chico. I think she lives in Southern Oregon now, but she's like a mystic energy healer lady. She's really cool and a great friend of the show. And she just sent me an email out of nowhere today saying, "Hey, just checking in, getting caught up on your show. I'm listening to the one you did with Julia a long time ago. It's fantastic. I've been listening to her show. It's pure gold. I love her. So yeah. So that was cool. And that came through today. So that's
How about
a
that?
little synchronicity.
Wow.
So
See, now that made my whole day.
yeah.
That's so awesome. Thank you for sharing that with me too. I hope, Rebecca, let me know what you think of this episode.
Yeah, I'll email. I haven't emailed her back. I'll send
Oh
an email
yeah.
that we just did this with her with you. So, Julia, are you gonna release this on your feed as well?
Yes, I am. I am so proud of this. We did so good together as a team.
Cool.
Somebody needs to hire us. But I will be releasing it on my show as well. So if you want to actually just say like where everyone can find you.
Yeah. Deborah gets red pilled everywhere you get podcasts. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. Email us at Deborah gets red pilled at PM.me. I answer every email. Now you
Thank
go.
you.
You do all your plugs now.
Okay, so I'm wherever you listen to your podcasts, iHeartRadio, the whole gamut, and I'm also on Instagram, cosmic.peach.podcast, and I'm thinking about starting a YouTube, so that'll be something.
We just
And
got
I just
nuked.
talk about a lot of crazy stuff, so I know they'll probably take me off anyways, but
Yeah.
I'll give it a try.
Yeah, we just got ours taken down for good. We got,
Oh, that's good. That's
yeah,
great.
it's just
I'll give it the
a
old college try though and just see
just
what
make sure you link it to Odyssey and then everything you'll when you link it to Odyssey, everything you put on YouTube will go will Odyssey will upload it as well. So when YouTube kicks you off, it'll still be there. So you'll have record of it.
Okay, good. That's good to
Yeah.
know, actually. Yeah, because I'm going in kind of blind here with the whole YouTube thing. But
Yeah.
yeah. I love 5-star reviews. I read them off on every episode when I get new ones. I love interacting with everyone because without you, there would be no show. So
Fantastic.
that's my plugs.
Deborah, where can people find you?
Wherever
Cubby,
they find you.
Cubby the Pit on
Cubby the
Instagram.
pit. Cubby
That's
the pit.
Deborah's dog. And yeah, this has been tons of fun. Way more fun than trying to convince Deborah that everything she's ever believed in the world is a
Is a
false
lie.
lie. Yeah. And yeah, there's other stuff I could say, but it's kind of mean. So I
But
won't. We're gonna end on a high note tonight. We're coming up on Thanksgiving, guys, my favorite holiday. So I'm in a festive mood, and this made it even better. So thank you so much, Julia.
yeah, thank you. Thank
Fantastic
you. Thank
show.
you. Thank
And
you.
we'll talk soon. I love these true crime collabs, and we'll keep doing them with you. When I figure something else out fun, or you find something that you think Deborah might like, let us know. We'll do something else. So I'll talk to you
Awesome.
soon on Monday, and we love you, and we love all our fans. So thank you, guys.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're gonna be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.